We'll find out today if a federal judge approves Detroit's plan to exit bankruptcy. If he does, the decision will wrap up about a year and a half after the process began. That's a pretty quick turnaround for the largest U.S. municipal bankruptcy ever. And it was made possible in part because Detroit and its creditors reached key settlements, including an unprecedented plan dubbed the Grand Bargain. From the Here Now Contributors Network, Michigan Radio's Sarah Swick has more on that deal and what it might mean for the role of philanthropy in struggling cities.
It's hard not to be awed by the scale and detail of Diego Rivera's Depression-era Detroit industry murals at the Detroit Institute of Arts. But these scenes depicting both the splendor and hardship of an industrial powerhouse were potentially at risk in the city's bankruptcy. That's because right now, Detroit owns the museum and its world-class collection. And that made Detroit's creditors, collectively owed billions of dollars, ask, why shouldn't the city have to sell at least some of it to pay them?
The idea that the art could actually be auctioned off was so offensive and so antithetical to our idea of democracy and the role of cultural organizations.
That's Darren Walker, president of the Ford Foundation. That fear actually turned out to be an important lever in the bankruptcy case. The mediators who worked behind the scenes in the case came up with an idea that came to be known as the Grand Bargain. Miriam Noland is the president of the Community Foundation for Southeast Michigan. She was one of the very first foundation leaders to hear the pitch late last year.
They knew that to move the mediation forward, it would be enormously important to be able to take care of the pensioners as best they could and to save the art of the DIA.
The deal would work like this. Nonprofits come up with the money to cushion the blow to the city's most vulnerable creditor group, its pensioners. In return, the art is transferred to a charitable trust where it's protected from city creditors forever. National Foundation leaders soon came to Detroit to hear the pitch as well. The Ford Foundation's Darren Walker says it was impassioned and persuasive, but there were also some big concerns.
The most important condition was the public commitment.
The foundations got that commitment when the state of Michigan agreed to kick in almost $200 million. The Ford Foundation alone is putting up $125 million. Walker says that's because the group sees Detroit as an important bellwether and a laboratory for cities across the country.
The challenge and opportunity now is to rebuild the civic grid. The public commons in Detroit is frayed, and it needs to be strengthened.
But others sound a note of caution about the Grand Bargain. William Chambra directs the Bradley Center for Philanthropy and Civic Renewal at the Hudson Institute. He thinks it could set a dangerous precedent.
Any major city that faces similar pension problems is going to be thinking, you know, if Detroit can go to the foundations and get stopgap funding from them, we should be able to do that too.
Chambra also worries about bigger implications for democracy. He says that while the Grand Bargain's funders may have noble intentions, the arrangement smacks a bit of feudal Europe, where weak central governments meant civil society was dominated by institutions like the church and aristocracy.
It's almost like in Detroit we're going back to that situation.
But the Community Foundation for Southeast Michigan's Miriam Noland says it's hard to know how precedent-setting the Grand Bargain really is. She says it does prove foundations can step up in extraordinary situations.
But in no way can it replace public dollars, federal, state, and local. It was maybe a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for foundations.
Miriam Noland and other civic leaders will be in the courtroom to hear the judge's historic ruling. For Here and Now, I'm Sarah Swick in Detroit.